More people every day are ditching animal products, embracing plant-based foods, and speaking up for what matters. With my experience as an international instructor for vegan nutrition and an award-winning author, I interview experts, innovators, and celebrities about the global movement towards a plant-based future. Do you want to learn how to combat the injustice in our food system affecting your health, the animals, and the planet? Well, you're in the right place. It all starts here with Eating Like You Give a Damn. Welcome to the Eating Like You Give a Damn podcast, the place to discover your passion for plant-based living one bite at a time. I'm your host, Stephanie Harder. If you're hungry to learn about the latest breakthroughs in nutrition and fitness, whether you want to achieve your best body and health or get the competitive edge as an athlete, then you're sure to get all that and more from this episode. Because I got to sit down with two of the most inspiring competitive athletes and health advocates in the world. I'm talking about power couple Luke and Emily Tan. Luke is a published author, speaker, and bodybuilding and CrossFit athlete from Singapore who's been featured in numerous media outlets, including Men's Health magazine. And Emily is a certified raw food chef, ACE certified trainer, and an ultra endurance athlete from Canada who recently conquered a 100K trail race in Australia. Together, they appear in summits and media outlets, as well as host the Awake Asia podcast. During this interview, we uncover why Emily began eating horse meat to remain competitive back in her speed skating days, and immediately recognized an overall improvement in how she felt in her body once kicking all animal products to the curb, how Luke once consumed over 2 pounds of meat per day on a typical high-protein, low-carb fitness trainer diet, and how today he's on a purpose-driven mission to change the way the fitness industry looks at food. How they became affected on a spiritual level when they stopped eating animals and animal products, and because they are proud parents of their sweet 2-year-old little girl, Sienna, we talk about Emily's pregnancy, birth, and raising of their daughter as a vegan in a non-vegan world. And I think you'll be really interested to hear how her obstetrician responded to Emily about getting certain nutrients for her pregnancy when she refused to consume dairy. Luke also tells us about the upcoming most anticipated online health and fitness event of the year, which he's the co-host for, and it includes interviews in real time with renowned doctors, Olympic athletes, and internationally recognized inspirations, and it's called the Plant Fit Summit, so be sure to listen to the end for those details. And before I kick off the interview with Luke and Emily, I want to tell you about a book I wrote called The Skinny on Eating Like You Give a Damn, How to Embrace a Plant-Based Diet, Combat Injustice, and Be a Rebel for Compassion One Bite at a Time. This book is a practical guide to help you get from what you're currently eating to eating plant-based, even if you could never imagine giving up your favorite foods, such as cheese, butter, or bacon. You get my best health tips, some of which I teach in an online vegan nutrition health coach certification course, as well as how to handle social situations, including friends and family who don't always understand why we would rebel against something that's considered normal in our society. As a bonus, you get my downloadable plant-based food guide, and a portion of the book sales goes towards helping the animals at Florida Rescue Farm. The Skinny on Eating Like You Give a Damn can be found online wherever books are sold, or simply go to eatinglikeyougiveadamn.com/book to order your paperback or Kindle copy today. Coming at us all the way from Singapore, which for me is on the other side of the globe, here's the interview with Luke and Emily. Luke and Emily Tan, how are you guys doing?
Brilliant. Very good. 9 p.m. Yes. Slot. I think we're as good as can be, but thank you very much for the invite. Really great to be on the show and love what you're about and look forward to, you know, hopefully to our chat and also hopefully sharing some good information to help people live this lifestyle. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm excited to kind of pull some wisdom out of you guys too. You guys are a vegan power couple, as far as what I hear among, you know, the plant-based community, which is really amazing. And now I kind of want to go back to like where you guys started. Like, how did you start down this path towards finding your way to eating plant-based and living more vegan friendly? Because I know that you guys are both athletes in your own right. So maybe kind of ping off of each other and kind of pull the story together about how that started.
For sure. I think for me, I always like to start handballing it to my wife, Emily, because if not for this beautiful lady sitting next to me, I would not be here today chatting with you, let alone doing what I do now. So I'll handball.
Smart move.
Yeah. So I always start with when I was younger. For me, I was never a big meat eater. Like, I've never liked it very much. I would back in the days, there was no such thing as vegan when I was younger, but I was always thinking when I'll be older, I'll be a vegetarian. And I used to cook tofu dishes for my parents, for my family. And, you know, like, it was always like what I preferred. But eventually, and I was an athlete as well when I was a teenager, and they would tell us back then, so that was in the late 90s, early 2000s, they would tell us, yeah, you cannot be an athlete. You cannot be performing if you're a vegetarian because you need complete protein. Especially, I was in speed skating, so it was a very power-based sport. So they were like, "No, no, no, not possible." I even had a coach that was forcing me to eat horse meat, which is kind of like, So it was like that. So that's why I was always like, "I'm not gonna be vegetarian now. I'll be vegetarian in my 20s when I stop skating." Da da da. So eventually, I stopped skating, and I tried to be a pescatarian for a while, but I was living a very unhealthy lifestyle. So it's just like, got back to it, and then I moved to Australia. And in Australia, I, like, you know, my health went came better. I just found myself. Adopted a better lifestyle, and I was eating very little meat when I was on my own. But then I met this guy. He was a personal trainer. He was a bodybuilder, and he was eating, like, you know, like the typical, like, you know, fitness industry diet, like the like 1 kilo of meat a day.
The more protein. I had colleagues that were drinking about 2 liters of milk every day for the IGF-1, which I think back is just so ridiculous. I mean, I didn't go down that path, but yeah, high protein,
like, yeah, like it was. And it was, so I started, because I had to cook for him, I started eating like him, and like, it didn't take long before I felt like absolute crap, sorry for the word. And it was just, to me, it was really not how my body liked to fuel. So very quickly, I was experiencing like very bad digestive problems. Like, every meal I was bloated. I came to the point that I disliked eating. Like, I was just scared of it. And I remember we were going to this place that's really quaint little cafe. And I remember just feeling really stressed, and I should not have, because I knew how bad I would feel afterward. And it was just always like that. And then eventually I looked into it, because I was starting to be like, you know, like, if I don't do something now, it could get really serious. So I remember seeing on Facebook a girl that I knew, and she was vegan, which is something I hadn't heard much in my life. I was like, wow, because, you know, I remember my mom telling me, "Oh, you can be vegetarian one day." There's these people, they are what they call vegan. It's very weird. Like, they're just very unhealthy and thin, because they you know, like, they're very extreme. So that's what I thought. But I saw she's vegan, and she looked so good. Like, I remember her skin was nice, her eyes were bright, and sometimes she would post pictures of her food, and it was like all fruits. And I was like, what, people can do that? Like, no, fruits are too much sugar, blah blah blah. But then I was very interested, and I basically, like, overnight cut out most animal products on my diet. I was just like, oh, I'll keep eggs or something. But then eventually the eggs went within like a few days, because I was like, I don't even feel like it. And I just saw so much improvement. Like, it was like overnight. It was just like, went from like feeling so bad every meal that, and I felt free. I was like, wow, I can have like two bananas in a row. You know, like, it was just like, it was just like, wow.
Without being so, you know, like stressed about the sugar content, right?
Carbs or anything like that.
Exactly. Carbs, the evil carbs, right?
Yeah. No, it was just, and I didn't feel like eating bad food or whatever. I was like, wow, this is healthy food. And it just, it all made sense. And I felt so good. And but then I knew I was with him, and we just got engaged, and I was a little bit scared because I know that it's a way of life. And I was, the more I was getting every day, I was like, wow, I love it so much, I never want to go back. And I was just so, it made so much sense. And but I was like, okay, you know, like I can still cook you a meat. I would never do that now. But back then I was just like, you know, I don't want to push you into that. I don't want to force you into it, because I want, if ever you take that decision, I want it to be your decision. So he got interested because I think he was jealous of all the carbs that I was eating.
Yeah, I was low carbs. So I was just like, wow, you can have carbs and not be guilty and not put on body fat.
And actually looking better. I've never had weight problems, but overnight, it just looked better, felt better. So for him, he had a friend, a work colleague, who told him that there was this documentary that she saw, and it was called Earthlings. I think we all know it. And so we watched it together, and for him, it was like overnight. Like we finished watching it. I had trouble watching the whole thing. It was just very, very traumatizing. But for him, like, he was like, we finished watching it, and he was like, oh, I'm done eating meat. That's it. I'm done. And yeah.
I'm very interested in hearing Luke specifically, like when you watched that film, you were able to actually see it all the way through, because that's something I haven't been able to do. Now I've seen some other slaughterhouse footage and factory farming conditions and things like that before. So by the time I got to know what Earthlings was and what it was about, you know, I was already, you know, vegan, and I just couldn't bring myself to see it. So could you kind of like describe like how it was that you felt like you were able to see the whole thing? Because I know many people, they probably can't stomach it. They'll see the beginning and turn away.
I think for me, it was just eye-opening. It's just like, you know, like they call it like a train wreck, in the sense that where you just, it's just there, you don't want to look at it. But at the same time, it's just curiosity. But the longer I stayed in the film, the more I got pissed off, because I just all of a sudden felt that all my life, pretty much, I was being lied to. And I mean, it basically portrayed animals from, obviously, for food, to leather, to fur,
to entertainment. Like circuses,
and all
like
of a sudden,
zoos.
I think, I mean, backtracking a little bit before I went into Earthlings, I saw Emily's transformation really within less than a week. She just changed. And by the same time, you know, she was shared with me this book called The Food Revolution, Food Revolution by John Robbins. And I read that book, and it just, she said about, you know, how a plant-based diet was healthier, better for the environment, more ethical. That sparked curiosity, sparked interest. And she shared with me Robert Cheek's Vegan Bodybuilding and Fitness book. I think in essence, she wanted me to get off my 6 kilos of meat, 6 to 7 kilos of meat a week, because I was just...
She was on a mission.
Yeah. without pushing it, I think she wasn't really pushy. Good. She was just kind of sharing, you know, okay, this is what, you know, this vegan bodybuilding guy, Robert Ching, seemed really nice guy. So yeah, I was having 6 to 7 kilos of meat per day. And yeah, all the way up to the point where I think I watched Earthlings. And because when I was younger, we traveled to Vietnam, and I remember seeing like cages of little dogs, like jam, like I would say a cage is probably about 1 meter by 1 meter and probably like 30 cm high. And all the dogs were just jammed in there and stacked on top of each other on the back of the bike. And I was just so disturbed. I was like, how can people do that? Like, these dogs are just puppies, you know, these are little puppies that, you know, I would go to, you know, back in the day, pet shop and say, oh my goodness, I want one of them. I want that puppy at home. But all of a sudden, that memory came back when I watched Earthlings, because it was I think back in all my life, it was cognitive dissonance. I was kind of conditioned to think and feel like certain animals were pets while others were food. Because when I was younger, we used to visit a pig farm, and you know, it was the farm and that was food. Mm-hmm. But I saw the pigs, but I just kind of disconnected. It was like, all right, that's pork in that sense. You know, it's euphemisms that we actually use. I mean, industry actually creates these euphemisms with intention for us to disconnect from the food that we actually eat, that they are, and the intelligent beings that they are. So all of a sudden, I made a connection that the dogs that I saw in Vietnam to what I was having on my plate the whole for the week, like a kilo of mince, a kilo, they were all equal. And I just literally, that was a deal breaker for me, because all of a sudden nothing else was more important than for me to say, you know, I'm not going to support this industry. I do not want to be a part of this anymore. And I did not know how or what I was going to do, but in my heart, I just felt like it just felt like the right thing. And it was a little bit of a leap of faith, because I didn't know what the hell I was doing. I thought I knew nutrition. I mean, and because I thinking about being a personal trainer and thinking that I knew nutrition, I remember going to the doctor on a high protein, low carb diet. And the doctor was giving me my blood work, and she was just telling me that my LDL was pretty high. And I was still at that point in time, I was still justifying that, yeah, she probably doesn't know what she's doing. I understand this whole nutrition. I've got it down pat.
Yeah, cholesterol is
yeah, you know, is you need cholesterol in your...
You need lots of it. That's just a scam, blah, blah, blah.
Exactly. Yeah. So I thought I knew nutrition. And then when I came back, and after that, I remember after the next day after Earthlings, I literally just chucked all my meat, threw away everything, and I just swapped it for... I was a bodybuilder, so I just thought in macro. So I was like, okay, I've got like a kilo of meat. Maybe I just go a kilo of tofu or 800 grams of beans. Maybe I'll do that, see what happens.
They'll have that trainer mindset. Yeah,
of course, compartmentalized everything, macronutrients, carbs. And then, of course, I mean, it didn't sit very well in my gut, because 800 grams of beans, this is a lot. It's going to get you pretty gassy. But
yeah, no kidding.
Surprisingly, though, I had a lot more energy, because all of a sudden I had all these, I even feel weird calling these carbohydrates coming into my system. And I could run. I could, back in the day, I just did not or could not or would not want to run, because I couldn't. I justified that it was catabolic to my muscle mass, because running, I'm going to burn my muscle, but really I was lethargic. So subsequently after that, about a week after, Emily and I went for a run, and I ran 5K without stopping. And I was just like, where's all this energy coming from? So around that time, I was also, when I was a personal, sorry, I'm jumping back and forth here, like thoughts are just popping into my head. So at that point,
that's
in time,
good. It's good.
I was competing as a natural bodybuilder in 2010. That was kind of when we were first going out. Mm-hmm. So I competed as an omnivore, high protein, low carb, went to stage, placed in that competition. But when I turned vegan, I wanted to step on stage again to prove that you know, you could do it 100% plant-based. So I stood on stage again 2013. I came second place as well. So that was my way of activism. So around the same time, I wanted to help others become the best version of themselves. So I was coaching plant-based fitness models for competition. So during that time, I was constantly absorbing and reading all about nutrition. I did my Equinel certification. I did the plant-based nutrition, sports nutrition with Matthew Kenny. I just wanted to learn and relearn what I thought I knew about nutrition and just flip it on its head. So fast forward, after that, you know, 2013, I competed. And then 2015, I competed in the US with Team Plant Build. Corin Sutton was one of my teammates and now friends for many years. And I competed as a CrossFitter. And fast forward to where I am, I mean, I don't want to go into the whole, all the nuts and bolts of things. If you don't want to go in, by all means, but for sure. But I mean, moving forward to where we are right now, zipping right up to 2019, you know, now I've written my first book. And I've got the podcast and the Plant Fit Summit coming, which we'll chat about later. And I just think that after my own transformation and doing the Plant Fit Summit and speaking to so many people living this lifestyle and really making that connection, you know, I want everybody to live and feel this way, because firstly, it's not right that innocent animals need to die and when it's completely unnecessary. But the one thing that can help and heal us is also great for the planet, and it's also great for the animals. So why not choose this? And I think it's just I just think people just need to be more awake and aware to what they're actually doing. So,
yeah, well, I agree 100%. And so Emily, I know that Luke had mentioned how he was starting to feel, you mm-hmm. know, there was that transition, like not just in the mindset, but in the body as well. Mm-hmm. And as, you know, as an endurance runner, mm-hmm. what was that transition like for you when you finally kicked the meat out?
For me, I was not, I've been running my whole life, but I was not serious at all about running back then. I was like running like once a week and just going to the gym mostly, like doing the trainings. I was not really passionate about it. It's because when I became a vegan and I started digesting my food and actually like not feeling bloated after every meal, I had so much more energy. And I needed, plus I was an athlete my whole teen years at pretty high level. And I missed that discipline. I missed having a big goal to work for. So I was like, why not sign up? I've always wanted to do a marathon. So I signed up for my first marathon and I gave myself like 3 months to train for it. I bought a plan off the internet of like runnersworld.com and I trained for my first marathon. And like, I went from, and I would not recommend that. I went from running like once a week to running 6 days a week. Pretty much like that. Yeah. So that's the recipe for injury. Mm-hmm. But you know, I did not get injured. So I'm not saying that a plant-based diet is magic, but you know, it helps
definitely
a lot.
Helps.
Yeah.
Well, very cool. So then for both of you then, what were the biggest challenges that you started to run into as you were kind of making that transition or after you made the transition and now you're talking to other people in your network, doing all this crazy working out, just being super athletes and stuff? What were some of those challenges you were bumping into?
I think thinking about challenges right now, I think I would say the early stages was getting my mind out, that mindset out of being afraid of carbs or being mm-hmm. afraid of food, because I came mm-hmm. from that fitness mindset where, you know, I remember doing a course by Rich Roll and Julie Payette. They did a plant-based nutrition course and I did that course.
Plant-based cooking.
And I saw Rich putting all these nuts and all these fruits I remember distinctly putting into his smoothie jug and blending it all. I was like, I wish I could eat like that and not feel guilty. Like, my goodness, there's a lot of carbs, there's a lot of fat in there. And because I came from such a compartmentalized and warped perspective of nutrition, that everything was in its component parts versus, as you know, food as a symphony. So I think it was just getting over that and actually looking at food as what it's meant to be. It's meant to nourish, it's meant to fuel me on a cellular level, on a spiritual level and energetic level. So I think it was really getting out of that fitness mindset and then really starting to look at food as everything, really, the way I live, and you know, it's not just a calorie, it's beyond a calorie, but you know, how it heals and how it nourishes your body. So I think that's my biggest challenge, but beyond that, I wouldn't say.
Yeah, for me, no, like for me, as I said, like it was very natural to me. I've never been a big meat eater, so to me it was just very easy. Probably because I was the one mostly cooking, like I was just getting recipes, but in this day and age, so easy. You know, you just type da 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 vegan and then I found plenty. So for me, it was just hit or miss at the beginning, you know, like maybe some days I felt so hungry because I realized, oh, I didn't eat enough because, you know, if you cut out meat, you need to add some more other things. So I remember the beginning and it's just like play around, you know, like anything, and then just see what works, see what doesn't work. And to me, as I said, it felt so natural from the beginning that I never, ever, ever thought like, oh, you know, this is not working. If I felt like not the best one day because I realized, oh, I did not eat enough, da, 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 I was just like, all right, I'll do better tomorrow. It was just, I'm just going to make this work. And so to me, I really didn't feel, I'd say the biggest challenge were not in the dietary side of things. For me, it was mostly like not buying leather anymore. Like, you know, when I realized like that would be very hypocritical of me to not eat it and then to just start like keep on buying leather shoes. And I remember I loved designer bags and stuff. And I was just like, nah, it's just hypocritical. And so to me, it was a little more, I think it was because it's at this point, it was almost like almost eight years ago, like there was not as much choice as there is now when it comes to nice designer style, like shoes and bags. I know it's very superficial, but you know, I'm a girl and it was that was the biggest challenge. But now I look back, I'm like, yeah, whatever.
Adding to what she's saying as well, I think eight years ago, I mean, back a little, just before, another thought popped in about the nutrition. I think the big thing was worrying about the protein content, because at one point I was supplementing with a lot of plant-based protein powders to try and hit my protein quota. But so that was nutrition. But I think back to what Emily was saying, 8 years ago, we didn't really have many vegan friends. We weren't really connected with many people you know, the way things are right now with all the different communities, all the different groups. So that's why.
Yeah, I was wondering about that, because you guys are so global and you're living in Singapore now. I'm very curious, you know, like what's the vegan, you know, or even plant-based like community like out there? Is there one, or are you working on starting that?
So when we went vegan, we were in Melbourne, Australia. So it is a really thriving community. So eventually we met all of them because we went to all the World Vegan Day and everything and just connected. In Singapore, when we arrived, that's one of the first things that we looked up. Because he's from Singapore, so he basically came back to his home country. So there is a small community, but it's really tight-knit. I think everyone know each other. Mm-hmm. There's a bigger community of like vegetarians, because we have lots of Indian vegetarians here and Buddhists. But like militant, like vegan community, there's a group called Animal Allies, which created, like an amazing website that is like the best resource for anything plant-based here in Singapore. There's a few people who work so hard and like, in addition to their normal day job, and they're like amazing activists here. But, I can see the difference between the community in Australia, is that here, because we know we're so small as opposed to the rest of, it's very inclusive. It's a bit more welfareist in a sense, like any little step is a step in the right direction, as the community in Australia is a bit more mature, I would say.
And I think that stems from the government, because protesting is illegal here. Mm. So if you actually hold up a placard and voice your opinion with something, you can actually get arrested. So things like activism and protests are very, very low-key, very mild. And I think that's really why the community is the way it is. And I think in that sense, it's welcoming and great. I mean, from where we are, and they do a lot of great outreach stuff. So I mean, that's a local community. And just through the PlantFit Summit that my co-host and I, Toby, and of course, Emily, my co-host at times, created, you know, we've connected with a lot of people, a lot of the experts from the US, and of course the community in the US. So I think, you know, it's really, really good that the internet has brought so many people together, that so much so that you don't actually feel alone, although sometimes you may feel alone, but when you just jump online, you can find like-minded people who share the same value and belief systems.
Yeah, for like, I remember at the beginning, there's people that we used to hang out with in Melbourne, and I mean, we're not talking to them anymore, like, you know, like we don't, it's just that at some point it's such a big part of your life that you don't connect anymore because there's that. We have a lot of omnivore friends back in Melbourne, but I remember there's a few people that I can think of that drifted away, because I think, like, you know, for them being in their fitness industry, diet was too important. And they were like, oh, well, we cannot go to the steakhouse anymore and like have a big chicken wings party. Okay. You know, like food is such a big part of life that sometimes it can be also a big part of a relationship. So, yeah.
True. Yeah. And of course that's true culture wide, like you're talking about, which is, it's so interesting that most cultures around the world, I mean, we grow up with meat sort of being the standard and, you know, the butter and the cream and the cheese, I mean, those just, and the eggs, they all just kind of bring an entire meal together. So it becomes quite a bit of a learning curve for a lot of people when they're introduced to this whole idea of plant-based living.
Sure.
And, and so, and there was something that you said about how it's a little bit more inviting over on that side of the world, per se, just because of, you know, there's the vocal activism and the signs and things like that are taboo, not allowed. And so over here in the States, of course, we do see a lot of that form of activism. Mm. So do you kind of, just because you get that perspective over there of it, you know, maybe not getting so much pushback, do you think that that's something that we could learn over here as far as the activism to get more people to understand what veganism is about and living a healthy plant-based lifestyle?
I think we can all learn from each other.
Yes, I think we need everyone.
We need everyone, I think. Because the thing is that sometimes on the flip side, when we look at Singapore or activists, your so-called activists, they may be quite flaky because they're just, oh, yeah, no, I'm just going to take it a step at a time. You know, I'm just going to have my latte here and there. So they're a little bit flaky. But on the flip
side, I get annoyed. Sometimes I'm like,
are you vegan or are you not?
I feel very vegan police. I'm like, stop it.
You say you're vegan. You say you're vegan, but you're having milk or you're having fish. So you're not vegan, you know. So there is that side. But at the same time, on the flip side, you know, we've been to community groups in Melbourne where it's just, my goodness, it's like war. You know, it's just like, guys, we're small enough. Why do we want to keep fighting with each other?
I like sometimes, you know, the gif that people put of like Michael Jackson eating popcorn, like reading the comments in some of the Facebook groups. There's some Facebook groups, the Australian Facebook groups, like that's it. Sometimes you just go there for the comments.
Yeah.
When somebody goes and asks, my cat, anyone else feeding their cat vegan? That's one that it's going to start. I have some backyard hens. Can I eat the eggs? Bam. What do you think of honey? Bam.
So I think.
Yeah, you get like 300-400 comments all under one post, and all these different, you know, like perspectives. It's a little overwhelming for the poor person that who asked, asked the question. How are they supposed to sift and sort?
It was just innocently asking and wanting to know, and I think that's the thing. And I think from my perspective, at least, and this is just me, is for me. I mean, just whether it's just my full time work, right? What is the end goal? You know, it's arguing with someone, going to create more animosity, and what's the end goal? If it's to save more animals, what is the best way forward? At the end of the day, you know, it's about focusing on solutions rather than judgment, because I feel like I choose not to judge meat eaters and even ones that kind of whatever, if they insult me in my face, because I was a meat eater before and I was one of those personal trainers that told my vegetarian clients to eat fish or white meat once a week because they weren't hitting their protein goals. And because they weren't hitting their protein goals, they weren't progressing, because I did not know any better, but I wasn't a bad person. And I think back about those times when I told a vegetarian client, if someone came and told me, you know, you dick, sorry, I shouldn't have said that.
No, you're fine. I'm actually supposed to be labeled explicit. Oh, okay. So.
Great.
So because
now
I'm
we go. Explicit. Let's get out of the bag.
Yeah, no, this is great. Like, just have at it, you know, speak how you would normally speak, because just by saying the word damn in my title, I earned label of being explicit. And you know what? I wear it proud.
So yeah, we unfiltered and unscripted. So that's what it is. But I think like what I was saying, I think it's just a case of, you know, not judging others, because we were once there before and no one's perfect. Everyone's doing the best that they can with the resources that they have. People are not their behaviors, and behaviors are conditioned through years of conditioning. So I think we can learn from each other. So to answer your question, I think the activism here can do like what the Western side, our counterparts do, and just like the Western counterparts, we can learn a little bit more, be more inclusive. It's about maximizing our impact. What is the end goal? More animals, more people coming into our party and living this life, inspiration, positivity. But I do get it as well. Sometimes that inspiration and positivity piece is hard when you just feel so pissed off, like when I did, when I first did watch Earthlings.
Yeah, like I heard something really good at the same time. Like I wish, it's always like, I wish everyone was vegan, completely vegan, and like, but then I heard something the other day, and I'm like, even though it made me think, and I was just like, they said if every single one person in the world would eat only one vegan meal a week, not vegan meal, one would eat vegan one day a week or something like that. It's like having 1 billion vegans or something like that, just by calculating the number of meals and everything. And I was just like, you know, that's kind of cool, you know, but at the same time, like, I wish everyone was, but A, that would be a major step in the right direction. But then we need we need those extremists. We need those Gary Francione, those Gary Yourofsky. Like, they've done so much for the cause. We need PETA. They do some stuff that I don't agree with, but they have amazing resources. They've done so much for the. So I think everyone has a place.
I think so too.
We need the very positive one. We need the baby step vegans. You know, like,
we need a flaky vegan from time to time too. Like, sorry, guys.
Yeah.
The flakes. But at least the flakes are already making a huge
effort, they weren't the flaky, they weren't anything before, now they're just flaky. So I think it's a step forward.
Yeah, I agree, definitely. And now, you also mentioned earlier about this, there's the spiritual element to this shift for you as well. So I know that that's the same for me. It's the same for so many other people that I talk to, that, you know, they come into this, you know, for whether they come in for health reasons or because they care about the environment or the animals, you know, on, at some level, they have this sort of like shift in the way that they see things spiritually. And, kind of like through what I call the vegan lens, seeing the world differently from the way that we used to. So can you expand a little bit more on the spiritual side for you?
I think spiritual side in the sense that, you know, I look at food as energy, energy on a cellular level and on a vibrational level as well. Because if you are what you eat on a cellular and spiritual level, because if the food that you eat, however way, you know, you call it humane slaughter or whatever it is, however way that animal was slaughtered, that energy, that cortisol, that stress that animal feels there and then before it's shot or before it's humanely gassed or whatever it is, that energy doesn't dissipate at all. It transmutes and you eat that energy. But if you stop consuming that energy, I think it changes you on so many levels. And that's why for me, I can speak from my own experience, because when I actually made that shift, I suddenly felt a sense of purpose and a drive, and a fire in me had been lit, and it was like the final missing piece in my puzzle. And I found that having that sense of connection with Mother Nature, with the universe, it's almost like unblocking that flow, and universal energy just literally flows through you, and you're almost a conduit of everything that's beautiful that exists, like the stars, the oceans. You're part of it rather than you're just a speck in the universe. So you're part of this whole system of a greater whole. And for me, I experienced that. And for me, when I made that switch, I realized that it wasn't just the food. It wasn't, and I started looking at, you know, like Emily was saying, leather ethical, you know, sweatshop slavery, stuff like that. I knew was happening at the back of my mind before I was a meat eater. But it was just like, yeah, I know about sweatshop slavery. I know about, you know, war, people not having enough water. Yeah, it's just a faraway thing itself. It's Africa. You know, maybe I'll donate sometime. But all of a sudden, I felt like I was part of the solution. And it was just as simple as just choosing what I wanted. It was just what I had on my plate. And it connected me that, you know, I could be a part of the change. And that literally propelled my life as an athlete. And that's why I compete, to be positive example. And it propelled my essence, in sense of I decided to pursue a path in entrepreneurship, become a speaker, become an educator. And it all started with that tiny little spark. And I witnessed this across, and like you said, with so many people, with health coaches, with personal trainers, with cafe owners, that suddenly like, wow, okay, I want to just create this thing. I want to start sharing this message. And I think when you actually make the connection, you realize that we are all part of a greater whole. We're on spaceship Earth, and we're just all connected, and there's enough for everyone. And when you have that mindset, I think it's no more like a, you know, competitive, you know, it's about competing each other. It's about, you know, how can we work alongside each other to create something that sustains us, but also sustains the planet, but it's also, you know, connects us with the animals, connects us with everything. So I think that's how I view my spirituality, connection to the greater whole, connection to the universe, connection to the essence of who I am. And it starts with being awake. And that's really why, how my brand awake method, my methodology to becoming awake, manifested. It was just through this one simple thing of deciding that, hey, I don't want my 1 kilo of beef anymore. And, you know, fast forward 8 years later, here we are.
Beautiful. And I also want to congratulate you for being fairly new parents. I believe your daughter is around 2 now. Is that correct?
Indeed.
Okay. And so with this whole, you know, it just sounds to me like you're very, very wise in the way that you're talking. And I can just see you imparting this sort of knowledge and wisdom onto your little girl as she gets older. And for me, I'm like, I'm super excited to hear and watch the journey as it unfolds too. But I know that there are probably a lot of listeners that are very curious, you know, because, you know, being vegan for as long as you have now, so you've had an entirely vegan pregnancy. And breastfeeding completely vegan with your daughter, and I'm assuming you're going to raise her completely vegan. So tell me more about that specific part of your journey through your pregnancy.
Yeah, so for me, I never, that again, like to me, it was never a question. I've read a lot of, you know, like celebrities that were like, oh, I started eating eggs again when I was pregnant. I was craving steak, whatever. Like I had the question, a lot of people were like, what if you crave meat? Are you going to eat meat or whatever? I've got to a point where I'm so in tune with my body. I'm very intuitive with the way I eat that I trusted 100% that I would crave what my body needs. And, you know, having not eaten meat, and back then it had been at least like 5 years or something, I knew that meat was most likely not going to be an option. But even then I thought, if ever I come to the point that I crave meat, it means that I need something that is in like, that
calorie
is
dense.
Calorie dense, and that is probably high in protein. So I would go towards like, you know, like tempeh, and like, never happened, never at all. I even remember one time I didn't even think because I craved it, but I don't know why. Like it came to my mind like something with chicken, and I felt sick. I hear about a lot of omnivore pregnant women who actually have aversion for meat when they're pregnant. And apparently those food aversions, it's actually the body telling you that is protecting you and the fetus from food that could be dangerous. So that's why like something like chicken, you know, like salmonella and that kind of stuff is quite frequent with these things. So yeah, never. So I was just very intuitive. I never calculated what I was eating. I just went with what I felt. And looking at the development of the baby and me, I realized like what I was craving was really in line with what the baby needed in those times. So if it was like like in the first trimester, I was like, because everything is building really quickly, I was more like protein. So I remember I ate a lot of tempeh, a lot of beans, and I was just craving that a lot. And then at some point it was more fats, and towards the end, because I was, you know, and we live in Singapore, it's very hot here. So I just wanted cooling food and, you know, like something that would make me feel, you know, refreshed and everything. And then after I gave birth, the first month, I mean, the Eastern wisdom tell you that you need really warming food and soup and stews in the first month postpartum. And that's exactly what I felt. Cause I remember I had a smoothie and it felt so wrong. It was so cold and it was just like, so yeah, I just trusted my body the whole way. And as I said, I gained just the right amount of weight, not less, not more. I took some supplementation because I'm quite careful with it. And plus, you know, sometimes we have a chip on our shoulder as vegans. Like we all just, you know, we want to show that, you know, I'm not going to have any problem. Plus my doctor, my obstetrician was pro-vegetarian, but she was questioning the fact that I was not drinking cow's milk. She said I needed the calcium. It's like, yeah, right. So I made sure that I was hitting everything, and I made sure that I always have an answer for her when she was asking me questions. So I was taking a multivitamin, like a prenatal multivitamin, a vegan one. I was taking an omega-3, a vegan omega-3, and I was taking a vegan vitamin D. And that's it. And I just kept it. And even like I took prenatal probably like almost up to not long ago because I'm still breastfeeding. So yeah, so that's all. But the rest, like the food was just going as I want. And I was eating very healthily because that's what I felt like. Mm-hmm. And it was a fairly smooth pregnancy, as smooth as can be. I mean,
and just to add to the obstetrician bit, I think she kind of really backed off when we had a feature on the
on
because all the while she was always asking about calcium, and we had a feature, like a big front page feature
on the national newspaper here in Singapore.
Oh, really? Yeah. Okay. What was that feature about?
About fitness, plant based, vegan living,
and and then I was pregnant, and yeah, like so.
And she saw, I think after that piece, and I think they interviewed.
She knew that she realized like these people know what they. Plus, every time I was talking with her, I was always like she could see that I'm well read, that I was using medical terms, and I'm, you know what I mean. I think she realized like she knows what she's doing. Yeah. She's not messing around. Mm-hmm. She really cares. Mm-hmm. I cared, obviously, and so yeah, so I'm happy that I proved her wrong, and I proved her that this can totally be done in a healthful way. And I had a fairly easy as delivery can be, like natural birth, and yeah, and I recovered quite quickly. I was back running 4 weeks after, and I was not forcing myself. I just felt like this is time to get back to it. And it's just natural. I just never felt like I was forcing something or not trying. It was one of the things that I worried the least while I was pregnant, like what I was eating or, yeah.
Yeah. And it sounds like you had a pretty quick and amazing recovery too. I'm sure you've talked to other new moms probably, and like just kind of curious, like what do they say their experience is? So that way, you know, listeners know like, okay, yeah, your experience was pretty, pretty awesome compared to that.
Yeah. I think everyone's different. It really depends the kind of delivery you have, but I know some vegan moms who live very healthily who had a C-section. So that's usually that, you know, that's C-section is a major surgery. But I've seen some that actually recovered fairly quick from it because, you know, like when you're eating healthy food that reduce inflammation and that just, I think it just speeds up recovery. But yeah, not wanting to go too much too much inflammation, but you know, like us after giving birth, you bleed for a while. And I talked to other person and I bled much less longer than a lot of women, like twice, like probably like 3 weeks for me, as a lot of women tell me they bleed up to 6 weeks. So I think it has to do with the fact that I was really diligent as well with how I was eating postpartum, and also took Chinese herbs. I made I was very diligent with taking like Chinese soups, Chinese broth, because here in Singapore, that's great. We have all access to that. Mm-hmm. So I really feel this helped as well.
Very cool. And then, you know, just as far as your daughter mm-hmm. is concerned, are your family members very supportive of you raising her vegan?
I think they see how good it was. Plus, again, like they see that we care. When she was one, I had a consultation with a nutritionist just to make sure that we were on the right path. And I think they see that we know our stuff and it's working very well for us, and we make sure that it works for her. I'm sure everyone is always a little bit, because they don't know it, you know, like for my mom used to hide meat in my potatoes because I didn't like it, but she was like, she needs it. So for them, it's probably to deprogram themselves and realize that it's not needed for children. I'm sure they are scared a little bit, but she's so healthy, and yeah, knock on wood, like she's had like a cold here and there, and that's about it.
Yeah,
like,
beyond that, she's just been extremely healthy. Yeah. And we know of other friends who are vegan as well, vegan children, and the thing is that it's interesting to compare that, you know, I don't know what or whether but comparing to other children, they're always kind of sick, but Sienna just kind of
bounces back plus she's quickly. Still breastfed, that's huge. I believe a lot in I'm very grateful that my body allows me to because I know it can be a struggle for some other women. But for me, it's breastfeeding's been pretty healthy, pretty easy from the beginning. So that's already huge. So even on days that she eats less or whatever happens, or she only feels, because at some point toddlers only want random stuff. So there's sometimes she will only want a bowl of rice. So like we cannot. So I'm telling myself at least she has her breast milk. So I know that a lot, like some of the stuff is taken care of. Yeah. So yeah.
Sure. And then like, how do you imagine things unfolding as she gets a little bit older and she's hanging out with more of her, you know, her friends and seeing what they eat versus, you know, what she's used to eating? How prepared do you feel to take on some of these challenges with explaining to her about her vegan lifestyle versus what other children might be eating?
I think at this stage it's hard because she's still a toddler, but for me as a dad, like I always bring up this example of us going to the supermarket and she loves going to the refrigerator, the fridge cabinet to look at the fish.
Because the fish here is sold pretty much a lot of time whole. So you can see it as if it's like still in the water. Like
but it's all frozen.
Which is so different here. You know, they chop the heads off so we don't have to imagine it being an animal.
Exactly.
They eat the heads.
They make it in curry.
Soup and something. Curry.
So curry, fish head curry. But she used to always run, say, that about fish. I want to see the fish on. And I just felt so conflicted. I was like, why is she so excited seeing their fish? So I just explained to her one day, because we do story time at night, I read to her stories and sometimes we watch like Nemo and stuff. She's like, the fish are meant to be happy. The fish are going to be happy when they're free. They're swimming in the ocean. And I just kept repeating that. And like a few days, a couple of weeks after she went in there and she walked past the fridge and said, the fish is chopped. It's not nice. And in her own little baby talk. So I thought that was really, really sweet that she kind of understood. And because I'm starting to read her like V is for Vegan. And I bought a few books from Book Depository, I think Linus the Vegetarian T-Rex and a few other books. And I think it's about telling her stories. And for me, you know, she's got these little playing cards of different animals. And I just kind of say, you know, these are your friends, you know, look at Mr. Monkey, look at Mr. Chicken, and giving them little names so that she connects and feels affectionate with them. I mean, maybe down the track, we may bring up the animal sanctuary, but I think we're just kind of taking it a step at a time. But it's funny though, because she wasn't brought up eating meat. So we brought her to, you know, having like spaghetti. We have Beyond Meat here.
The Impossible Meat as well that we have in Singapore. Mm-hmm. And they made a bolognese using the Impossible Meat. And because meat is an acquired taste, it's an acquired texture, I believe. Like I remember I did not like it. Obviously she has not acquired that taste. So she was pushing it back. She was just eating the pasta. So every time we go there, we ask them, can you make the bolognese but without the Beyond Meat? They're like, oh, do you want the real meat? And we're like, no, just veggies. And because she really dislikes it.
And hopefully, I think with what we're doing right now, you know, we can only do what we can as parents to give her the right tools. But at the end of the day, you know, it's about arming her with the knowledge. And when she's old enough for her to make her own.
The ethics.
The connection. And I think at this age, it's just about, you know, teaching her about compassion, because I think children have that inbuilt. I think all of us have that inbuilt
in us. I think we learn to take that compassion away. Like, just go back on the spirituality side of things. For me, it felt like my whole life, a lot of time I've been shut up. Like, I remember being young and we did the chicken hatching project in school, like, which is really bad. But anyways, back in the days, and I remember we got to bring our chick home for the weekend, and I was so sad to let it go after two days. They're like, oh yeah, they're gonna be happier, right? Yeah. But you know, I was like, I was telling my dad, I'm never gonna eat chicken again, you know. And my dad was like, you're gonna die if you don't eat chicken, like eat it, like, you know. And it's the kind of stuff, like, as I said, my mom used to hide meat in my potatoes. Like, we get that. My dad was like, chickens are so dumb, you know, like he would tell me that, like, look at you, they just, you know, and look at cows, they just, you know, like, that's what you get drilled with. You get to, like, but you think they're so beautiful, you think they're so sweet, and you know deep down that they have all this personality and everything, but you learn to push that away, to say, like, they're food. So I really think that we probably worry too much, thinking like, oh, we need to teach her everything. I think that naturally that's how she feels, that animals are a friend and we don't won't have to do much more than just culture that feeling nurture. That she has. And
I think they say children, we don't teach children, but children become our best teachers. So So I think it's just about letting her guide us, but while just trying keeping her in the lane. Mm-hmm. It's like, no, mm-hmm. keep in the lane.
Sure, yeah. Just keep her guided down that right path as you see it as wise parents, yeah.
Indeed.
Well, as we come to a close, and I'm really sad to say goodbye to you guys, please tell us a little bit more about what you have coming up and how we can connect with you for people that want to go deeper with you.
For sure. I'm not sure when this episode will air, but in a few weeks' time, August 31st, where Toby and I were launching the Plant Fit Summit. This is our third year. As of date, I've probably interviewed about 100 experts now, from Dr. T. Colin Campbell, Gregor, to Olympic level athletes, cancer survivors, people who have reversed lupus. Like, oh my goodness, the stories that I've heard and all the information that was shared, I've just become a different person just being a part of, you know, this whole summit experience. So I'm just so excited to share this particular summit. PlantFitSummit.com is how you can sign up for free.
And how many years have you done the Plant Fit Summit now?
This will be our third year. This is our third year. So this is, I would say, one of our best yet, because mm-hmm. I mean, I've just spoken to people on gut health, on cancer specific, someone that actually is a cancer researcher and a doctor as well, athletic performance, like, it's just across the board. But in to a nutshell, if your listeners want to be a part of it, just go to plantfitsummit.com, sign up for free. And from August 31st to September 8th, I think you can tune in for free. It's around the world to listen to these experts. Me and Toby interview these experts about how to live a thriving, fit, plant-based lifestyle, but at the same time, give you inspiration. Let's say family members are sick, to have a little bit of hope that you know, health and your life ahead of you is in your hands. So yeah, I think definitely that would be the big one for me.
Yeah.
In terms of for me, how to get in contact, like I'm on Instagram as Awake Method. AwakeMethod.com is my website. And just my personal site, personal Instagram handles, I'm Luke Tan. but yeah, Awake Method is my handle. And I'll leave that to Emily.
Yeah, so for me, what's coming up, I have a race. So I just ran a month ago Ultra Trail Australia, which was 100K in the Blue Mountains in Australia.
Woo! Yeah, it was great. 100K. Mm-hmm. Okay, wait a minute. How far is that in miles?
It's 63 miles.
Oh, Lordy.
Yeah.
Girl, you are a force.
Yeah, so that was really good. It was outside of my comfort zone because, as I said, I don't live in a mountain country. But it was, it went really well. I finished fifth female. So I battled all day with women that I have looked up to for a few years now. So it's just really good to see where I'm at now. And my next race will be in the Cameron Islands in Malaysia. It's not that far from here, but apparently it's much cooler and it's a mountainous area of Malaysia. So I'm really looking forward to explore it. And it's only going to be a 55K race. So that's 37 miles, I think. So
only 37
exactly.
miles.
Exactly. Even for me, like only 37
I can barely get through a 5K. Come on, guys.
Likewise.
So that's my next race. Other than that, that's the one that I'm training for at the moment. And yeah, that's what I do.
And your website, I think.
Oh, yes. Yeah. How to connect with me. I'm on Instagram. I am at Emily Endurance Runner. Emily is Emilie, and an endurance runner, all in one. And then I've got my website is the same. I've started a blog. I think I've got two posts. I'm gonna try hopefully soon to be able to post more. But I did a race recap of Ultra Trail Australia. So www.emilyendurancerunner.com, and on Facebook I'm my Emily Tan. So yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot to mention as well. Like, we also have our own podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So
Yeah, I was just going to mention that too. Tell us a little bit about your podcast.
So yeah, it's awakemethod.com/podcast. And I think it's about the whole premise of that is to be the bridge between East and West. East and West, because there's so many good people doing great things in the East. And also, obviously, through the Plant Fit Summit, I've met so many inspirational people that I hope to share that plant-based conscious living with, you know, my fellow countrymen and the region as well. And it's about, you know, helping people live a fitter, healthier, more purpose-driven, conscious lifestyle. So to live with purpose, to live consciously, but also to be the best version of yourself, because I think you only live once. Mm-hmm. You might as well do it epic. Mm-hmm.
So, fantastic. Yeah. I love that messaging. So thank you so much, you guys, for coming on the show today. This has been absolutely inspirational, I'm sure, for a lot of listeners too. So I can't wait to get this out there. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That was multi-talented and well-decorated athletes Luke and Emily Tan. Every day, we are bombarded with conflicting information on nutrition, fitness, and health. And Luke wants to give you access to doctors and athletes who can show you what to eat and what not to eat based on the latest unbiased scientific research. That's what the Plant Fit Summit is all about. And this free event begins on Saturday, August 31st, 2019. To register today, go to plantfitsummit.com or click the link in the show notes. To learn more about the mission of Luke and Emily, or if you're listening after the Plant Fit Summit has ended, be sure to visit their website, awakemethod.com. Their social media handles are in the show notes. And when you connect with them, be sure to let them know that you heard them here on the Eating Like You Give a Damn podcast. If you're veg curious or are on the path to replacing animal-based foods with healthier plant-based options, woohoo! Be sure to join our community of rebels in the Eating Like You Give a Damn Facebook group for recipes and support. Request to join us at eatinglikeyougiveadamn.com/group. If you want podcast updates so you can see what's coming up next, positive vegan-friendly inspiration, and to see what I like to eat, follow me on Facebook and on Instagram at Eating Like You Give a Damn. That's it for today. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe, leave a review, and share the show with your friends and family. New episodes release every Monday. And until next time, veg on, rebels.